Okay, let's unpack this today. I want you to cast your mind back, way back to the ancient history of, say, 2023 or 2024.
Right, the Dark Ages.
Yeah, literally the tech dark ages. Do you remember that specific moment when the internet collectively lost its mind because an AI could generate a picture of a cat riding a skateboard?
Oh, I remember. It feels like a lifetime ago, honestly.
It really does.
We were all staring at these static pixels and just thinking it was pure magic. We thought, we've peaked.
Exactly. We thought computers can make images. Now we're done. And the reason I bring that up is because today, looking at the landscape here in early 2026, that magic looks a lot like cave paintings.
Oh, yeah, cave paintings is a good way to put it.
Because the goalposts haven't just moved right there. They've completely vanished. We aren't just talking about generating an image or even a video anymore. We're talking about generating the actual laws of physics.
And that is the key distinction right there. We are moving from mere content creation to genuine world building. And honestly, the source material we have today, this deep dive analysis we're doing on the report from Taken Game, it suggests we've accidentally stumbled into a sci-fi novel.
It really does feel that way for you listening because we are diving into Google's latest release, which involves this new underlying model called Genie 3, and also a tool with perhaps the strangest name in tech history, which is Nano Banana Pro.
It is a name that definitely sticks with you. I'll give them that.
For sure.
But if we strip away the quirky branding, what we're really looking at is a massive leap in what researchers call action inference.
Right, and for the listener, that term action inference might sound a bit academic, but it really is the secret sauce here. So the mission for our deep dive today is to understand that massive shift. How do we go from an AI that just knows what a cat looks like to an AI that understands gravity and logic and collision, and it does all of this without ever seeing a single line of code?
Yeah, it breaks your brain a little bit if you try to compare it to how we used to build software.
So let's start with the brain of the whole operation, which is Genie 3. The source material calls it generative interactive environments. Now, usually when I play a video game, let's say I'm playing a platformer or a racing game, I know there is a game engine underneath it.
Well, like Unity or Unreal Engine.
Exactly. Unreal. There is code written by a human that explicitly says, if the character jumps, move them up the y-axis by 10 pixels and then apply gravity.
Precisely. In traditional game development, everything is explicit. It's totally deterministic. A human programmer has to sit down and write the laws of that specific universe. If you
Right.
don't write a line of code for gravity, your character just floats there. If you don't code collision, you just walk right through the walls. The computer only knows exactly what you tell it.
But the Teaching Game analysis says Genie 3 doesn't have a game engine.
Not in the traditional sense, no. Genie 3 is a foundation world model. It's this massive neural network. It hasn't been programmed with the laws of physics at all. It has learned them.
Okay, wait, this is the part I really need you to break down. How does a piece of software learn physics without being taught physics formulas?
This is where that term action inference comes in. Think about how a baby learns about the world, right? A baby drops a spoon from the high chair, the spoon falls.
Right.
The baby grabs it and does it again. The spoon falls again. Eventually, the baby builds this mental model that says, when I let go of things, they go down.
Basic cause and effect.
Exactly. Genie 3 did the exact same thing, but on a massive, massive scale. It wasn't trained on code like older models. It was trained entirely on video.
Wow.
Millions and millions of hours of gameplay footage. It watched people play 2D platformers and 3D shooters and racing sims and open world RPGs.
So it's just watching.
It's watching and it's predicting. It processes billions of frames of characters running and jumping and falling off cliffs and bumping into walls. And through that massive observation, it just started to identify statistical patterns.
Okay.
It realized, hey, in 99.9% of these videos, when a character runs off a ledge, their vertical position decreases rapidly.
So it basically guessed gravity.
It internalized the concept of gravity as a statistical likelihood. It learned that solid objects stop other solid objects. It learned that fire usually hurts. It learned causality.
That is wild.
So when you play a game generated by Genie 3, the AI isn't calculating a rigid physics formula. It is literally predicting the next frame of the video based on your controller input and what it knows about how worlds are supposed to work.
So it's essentially hallucinating a future where the physics are correct.
In real time, yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. To you, the player, it feels like a solid game engine. You press A and Mario jumps. But under the hood, it's a video generation model that just intrinsically knows when the user presses A, the next frame should show the character higher up.
let's apply this to a specific example from the source, because I think that really helps visualize it. The analysis talks about building a cyberpunk city.
Right. So let's say you ask Genie 3 to generate a 2D platformer in a dark, rainy, neon-lit cyberpunk city.
Okay, I've got the visual in my head. Rain, neon signs, grimy streets.
The model generates that imagery instantly. But because it has seen millions of hours of gameplay, it also infers the physical properties of that specific environment. It knows that rainy pavement in video games usually implies slippery.
Wait, so the floor is actually slippery to play on?
Yes. When you move your character, you might notice a little slide or a loss of traction when you try to stop. And remember, no one programmed friction equals low.
Right. No code.
The AI just knows that in its training data, wet floors make characters slide.
And it knows how objects react, too.
Exactly. If your character jumps on a wooden crate in the cyberpunk city, the crate reacts. Maybe it shakes or maybe it breaks apart. The AI infers the material properties just from the visual context alone. It knows wood is breakable and steel is not purely by visual association.
I mean, that really is the ultimate democratization of game development. You don't need to know C++ or Python or how to write a collision script anymore. You just need to describe a scene, and the AI figures out how the world works.
It completely removes the technical barrier between having an idea for a mechanic and actually seeing it in action. You provide the vision, and the AI provides the physics.
So we have the brain, which is Genie 3, this massive model that learned reality by basically binge-watching YouTube. But a brain needs hands. And that brings us to the tool with the incredible name, Nano Banana Pro.
Yes. The name everyone in the industry is talking about right now.
I have to ask, I mean, why? Why Nano Banana? Is there some hidden technical meaning there?
Well, the Tech and Game report suggests it's likely a deliberate nod to the experimental culture over at Google Labs. They have this long history of using these whimsical, almost nonsensical internal code names for their most cutting-edge projects.
This is not Google World Builder Enterprise Edition.
Exactly. It signals that this isn't a polished corporate suite like Microsoft Office. It's a wild, disruptive experiment. It's meant to feel playful. It really sounds like something a couple of engineers came up with at 3 a.m. after way too much caffeine, and it just kind of stuck.
It definitely sets a tone. But practically speaking, what does it actually do? The analysis calls it the user interface for Genie 3.
Think of it as the bridge. Genie 3 is the complex heavy lifter. It's the engine block. Nano Banana Pro is the steering wheel and the dashboard. It's how you, the user, actually talk to the neural network. And the workflow they describe in the report is shockingly simple. It's just a three-step process.
Walk us through it. So I'm sitting at my computer. I open up Nano Banana Pro. What happens?
Step one is ideation. You give it a prompt. But unlike the old days where you needed to model 3D assets or learn Blender, here, you just use natural language or images. It's fully multimodal.
So I can just type, make a game about whatever.
Or you can upload a sketch. And this is honestly my favorite detail from the report. You can literally upload a napkin sketch.
An actual drawing on a napkin.
Yes. The example the source gives is great. Imagine you're at a coffee shop. You have this sudden idea for a level layout. And you scribble a rough stick figure drawing on a napkin. You take a photo of that napkin with your phone and upload it right into Nano Banana Pro.
And then what does it do with that?
You add a text prompt to give it some context. The example used in the analysis is a level of a Mario-like game, but on Mars with low gravity and enemies that look like rusty robots.
Okay, yeah, I can visualize that. Red dust everywhere, clanking robots, floaty jumps.
So that's step one. Step two is the initial rendering. This takes just a few seconds. The AI takes your napkin sketch structure and your Mars text prompt, and it generates a high-fidelity visual preview. It looks just like professional concept art.
It's essentially asking, is this what you meant?
Exactly. It shows you the rusty robots and the red landscape.
Uh-huh.
If you don't like it, you can just tell it, make the robot scarier or make the sky purple. But if you do like it, you hit the magic button.
Which brings us to step three.
Step three, entering the simulation. You hit play, and that static concept image, it wakes up.
Wow.
It literally becomes an interactive environment. You can grab your keyboard or plug in a controller, and suddenly you are controlling that character inside the sketch you just made.
That transition, I mean, going from looking at a static picture to actually being inside the picture, that is the huge aha moment for me.
It really is paradigm shifting.
The source had this quote from a tech and game analyst that honestly gave me chills. They said, this is no longer an image generation tool. It is a gateway to parallel universes.
It's a heavy statement, but it's completely accurate. When you generate an image with an older tool like Midjourney, you are just a passive observer. You judge the aesthetic and that's it. When you generate a simulation, you inhabit it, you explore it. That shift from passive media to active reality is monumental.
But let's be real for a second here. Creating a world from scratch, even if you're just writing a prompt, is daunting. I mean, telling someone, hey, build a universe is a lot of pressure for a random Tuesday afternoon. What if I'm just not feeling creative?
That is what they call the blank canvas problem, and Google clearly anticipated it. This is where the platform pivots from just being a utility tool to being a social network. Mm-hmm. They have a massive section dedicated to pre-built worlds.
So it's like a gallery.
A massive gallery, yeah. Full-level simulators, artistic environments created by Google and by other users all over the world. But the real magic isn't just booting them up and playing them. It's the remix feature.
Right. The source called this the killer feature.
For a very good reason. Think of it like Roblox, but powered by this high-end generative AI. You can enter a world someone else built and tweak it instantly.
What kind of tweaks are we talking about here? Is it just changing the colors or lighting?
Oh, it's everything. Let's say you find a standard high-speed racing simulator. With one single click, you can change the entire art style. You can say, turn this into a 1920s watercolor painting.
And it's still fully playable after that.
Still fully playable. The cars are now made of painted strokes. The track is a canvas, but the driving physics remain perfectly intact. But you can go even deeper than visuals. You can manipulate the physics themselves.
So I can mess with the gravity.
Yes. The example in the article is entering that exact racing simulator and setting the gravity to moon mode. Suddenly, the cars aren't gripping the track anymore. They're floating off on tight turns. You've fundamentally changed the core gameplay loop just by typing the words moon mode.
I absolutely love that. It's like having a universal cheat code for reality itself.
And my absolute favorite feature mentioned in the report is character injection. You can take the protagonist out of any game and swap them with literally anything else.
Anything, like what?
The source mentions this hilarious example. Taking a terrifying horror game, scary, dark atmosphere monsters lurking everywhere, and replacing the main character with a funny cat model.
So you're navigating this absolute nightmare realm, yeah. But you're just a goofy, low-poly cat.
Exactly. And here is where Genie 3 really shows off again. The AI actually generates the walking animations for the cat in real time. It figures out how a quadruped would move and react in that specific environment. It doesn't break the game. It adapts the game around the new character.
That really drives home that action inference point from earlier. It knows how a cat is supposed to move, so it just makes it happen.
It's remix culture applied to reality simulation. You aren't just remixing a song or a video clip anymore. You are remixing a lived experience.
Well, of course, we are technical realists here on The Deep Dive. We have to talk about the catch. Because with tech, this brand new, there is always a catch. And this one seems fairly significant.
Ah, yes, the 60-second limit.
Yeah. The source says that all simulations are hard capped at 60-second sessions. That feels, I don't know, really short. I mean, I can't even get through the menu tutorial of a normal game in a minute.
It definitely feels short if you're thinking about playing a traditional video game, like sitting down for a 3-hour session of Zelda or something. If that's what you want, this isn't for you quite yet. But we have to look at the why behind it.
Why is it capped? Is it just Google artificially limiting it or being stingy?
It's a harsh hardware reality right now. The computational power, the pure compute required for this is absolutely terrifying. We aren't just processing text tokens like a standard chatbot. We are calculating real-time physics, rendering complex graphics, and responding to live user input, all generated on the fly by a neural network.
So every single second of gameplay is essentially torching their servers.
It is melting them down. Yeah. The inference cost is just astronomical compared to an LLM. So until the hardware catches up to the software, until we have radically more efficient chips, we get a minute.
But the expert in the Ticking Game article argues that those 60 seconds are still, quote, worth their weight in gold. Who is this actually for if you can only play for 1 minute at a time?
Think about the massive creator economy. Think about TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels. How long are those videos typically?
Usually well under a minute.
Exactly. Nano Banana Pro has a built-in seamless export feature. You play your 60 seconds, maybe it's that moon mode car crash or the funny cat in the horror game, and you can instantly download that session as a high-quality MP4 or WebM video.
Oh, I see. So for a content creator, the actual gameplay isn't the final product. The video of the gameplay is the product.
Precisely. Imagine the viral challenges, right? The craziest world I could build in 60 seconds with Genie 3. It's essentially an infinite content machine. And for actual game developers, it's an unbelievable rapid prototyping tool.
Almost like a 3D sketchpad.
Yes. Instead of spending 2 months coding a basic prototype just to show an investor, you spend 10 minutes in Nano Banana Pro. You generate a video of the exact gameplay loop you're imagining. You put that video in your pitch deck, and you say, this is the vision.
That is incredibly valuable. It completely separates the core idea from the technical barrier of entry. You can sell the idea before you write a single line of code.
It effectively creates a brand new use case in the industry, the concept creator.
Now, speaking of selling things, we do need to talk about the price of entry here, because right now I can't just open up a browser, search Nano Banana Pro, and start making Mars levels, can I?
No, unfortunately you can't. It is currently locked tight behind a paywall. To get any access to Genie 3 Labs, you need the Google One AI Premium Ultra subscription.
The Ultra tier. So they are definitely positioning this as a high-end premium product.
And the reasoning goes right back to those melting servers we just talked about.
Yeah.
The source is very clear on this. World-building models cost significantly more to run than your standard large language models like Gemini or GPT. It puts massive, unprecedented pressure on Google's TPU-equipped data centers.
So the high price is basically a gatekeeper.
Exactly. Restricting it to the Ultra subscribers is their way to control the traffic flow. If they open this up to everyone for free, the servers would completely crash in about 5 minutes. This ensures that the people who are paying actually get a smooth, functioning experience.
That makes total sense. It's an experimental phase, so they have to throttle it. And the source also mentions that this subscription includes the new Gemini 3.1 Pro update, which is a nice little bonus.
Right? It frames the whole subscription as an investment for power users. If you want to be at the absolute forefront of where tech is heading, this is the ticket price.
So let's zoom out a bit as we wrap up. We've got the brain, which is Genie 3, the hands, which is Nano Banana Pro, and we understand the current constraints. The ticking game analysis wraps up with a look at the future, specifically projecting out to around 2030. What is their vision there?
The conclusion is honestly fascinating, and it predicts a massive disruption for the entire entertainment industry. They suggest we are seeing a fundamental shift in how media is consumed. Up until now, AI has mostly been a brainstorming partner, right? Like, give me 10 ideas for a fantasy game.
Right. It helps you start the work.
But now, the AI is actually delivering the final playable product. The vision for 2030 is that we might stop downloading games entirely.
We'd stop downloading games. Explain how that would work.
Think about it. A modern AAA game is huge, right? Maybe 100 gigabytes of files. You're downloading all these pre-made assets, textures, sound files, voice lines. But if the AI can generate the entire world perfectly in real time, why download the assets?
You're saying we would just stream the generation itself.
Exactly. The concept is just-in-time gaming. You wouldn't go to a digital storefront and buy Grand Theft Auto 7. You would literally just tell the AI, I want to play a gritty crime drama set in 1980s Miami. And it generates the city, the cars, the missions, the dialogue, and the physics right then and there.
So the game literally does not exist until I ask for it.
And it ceases to exist the second you turn it off. It's completely ephemeral.
That changes absolutely everything. And that 60-second limit we discussed earlier.
That is just a temporary hardware hurdle. As chips inevitably get faster and algorithms get more efficient, that limit just vanishes. It goes from 60 seconds to 60 minutes to infinite.
It's like how early internet video was super grainy and buffered constantly. We thought that was just how it was. Now we stream 4K movies without even thinking about the bandwidth.
Exactly. We are currently in the grainy buffering phase of reality generation.
That is both incredibly exciting and honestly a little overwhelming to think about.
It is. The article rightly calls it a wake-up call for everyone from giant AAA studios down to solo indie creators. The fundamental tools are changing, and the barrier between merely having an idea and actually playing that idea is dissolving right in front of us.
So to recap what we've covered in this deep dive today, Google has dropped Genie 3, which is a model that literally learned physics by watching YouTube. They've given us Nano Banana Pro, a tool that lets us sketch a world on a napkin and play it in seconds. It's social, it's infinitely remixable, but for now it's short, only 60 seconds. And it's behind a premium Ultra subscription because it eats server power for breakfast.
That is the new landscape, perfectly summarized.
If you are listening and you happen to already have that Ultra subscription, the call to action from both of us is clear. Go to the Genie Project website. Try it out. Even if it's just to put a funny cat in a horror game to see what happens, you are quite literally playing with the history of technology.
Absolutely. Don't just read the articles about it. Experience the shift yourself.
But before we go, I want to leave you with a thought. We talked about shared reality a lot in gaming over the years. We all played the same Super Mario level 1-1. We all know exactly where the hidden 1-up mushroom is.
Right. It forms this collective cultural memory for an entire generation.
But if the barrier between a random dream and a fully playable reality is now just a few seconds and a text prompt, what happens to that shared experience? If by 2030 we are all just generating our own custom-tailored video games perfectly suited to our specific tastes and moods, are we gaining infinite creativity, or are we just isolating ourselves in our own private perfect universes?
That is the ultimate question, isn't it? When everyone has the power to build their own bespoke world, who will ever bother visiting anyone else's?
Something to mull over while you generate your next rusty robot Mars base. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you in the next simulation.